Hello, welcome to Dr. M's Women and Children First podcast. This week is the Salisbury Pediatric Associate Health and Wellness Newsletter. I'm your host, Dr. M, and this is volume 14, issue number 12, with that corresponding to the week of March 4, 2024. This week we're going to look at pregnancy and chemical avoidance, a slight literature review, and a recipe of the week. Free thoughts, walk with others, enjoy fellowship in a beautiful world. There's some truth that rings through there for me. I love spending time outside, enjoying the beauty of Mother Nature, and sharing it with others. It's one of my favorite things in the world to do, whether it's my wife, my kids, my rescue buddy, Charlie, or anybody else. It's just an enjoyable way to live. So get out there, get some time with somebody, talk about positives, live in the world of what is best as best you can. Dwelling on the negative is not in the best interest of any of us. All right, let's get into section one. Pregnancy is a super important time. We all know that. Do not take by inhalation, ingestion, or other exposure anything that is a potential toxin for the body. That's just straightforward, right? Everybody sort of knows that. But what are we talking about here? What things should we avoid? Well, doing some recent reading, I thought of the first one being caffeine. Caffeine is probably the number one drug consumed on the planet. We take it in as coffee, we take it in our chocolate, we take it in tea. But for most people, it's not a big deal because they don't do a lot. So in low to minimal doses, it is clear that caffeine is safe for pregnant women and for their offspring, for that matter. Caffeine easily crosses into the placenta and thus into the baby's circulation during pregnancy. So, therefore, if you took a lot in, that could be problematic. In utero, babies cannot metabolize caffeine well, putting them at much higher risk than the adult pregnant mother with increasing exposure. The data does not support the same reality for more moderate to high doses being safe. Caffeine is known to raise blood pressure and heart rate in all users in variable numbers based on their metabolic capabilities. Thus, as pregnancy is a state of elevated blood volume and cardiac output, caffeine as a drug is counter-beneficial to the mother and thus the child. The studies note that there is an increased risk of early trimester bleeding and miscarriage, preterm births, and birth defects. They also note that smaller infant birth parameters, including weight, length, and head circumference, are associated with high doses of caffeine intake. And finally, caffeine may, and I use here very strongly, may decrease fertility in both men and women, and this possibly is dose-dependent if we believe that the association as the data is weak, but possible. So take home here is pretty clear. Let's keep caffeine to a mild or mild to moderate dose while pregnant. Number two is endocrine disrupting chemicals. Now, this is a whole nother ball of wax. EDCs just have so much data that they're not good for us. The amount of data here regarding associative risk that I absolutely believe in complete avoidance of these chemicals at all costs while pregnant. These chemicals are extremely dangerous to a growing fetus. The biggest names in this category are phthalates and bisphenols, among others, are a major problem for humans as they disrupt endocrine function, interfering with the growing placenta, the fetus, and the mother. There is solid evidence that these chemicals are raising the risk of intrauterine growth delays, gestational metabolic derangements, as well as preeclampsia. These chemicals are another risk factor for autism and neurobehavioral changes in growing humans. So avoiding synthetic chemicals like solvents, lubricants, including polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, or polybrominated biphenyls, PBBs, dioxins, plastics like bisphenols with any letter, BPA, BPB, BPC, BPF, BPS, BPAF, or plasticizers like phthalates, pesticides, fungicides, and more. You want to avoid all this stuff. The unfortunate reality is these chemicals are called forever chemicals because they do not degrade well over time in nature, putting us at high risk for exposure and disease. Number three, acetaminophen, Tylenol. Just don't take this product while you're pregnant. This drug blocks glutathione activity, among other pathways, and is not safe while pregnant in my mind. Increased attention, sleep, and behavioral concerns were noted in offspring of acetaminophen users. It is possible that the acetaminophen users had higher inflammation driving drug use, which was the actual cause of the findings. Yep, it could be. Thus, I recommend all of the known functional medicine lifestyle decisions to reduce the risk of inflammatory concerns that push someone to use these medicines in the first place. From a paper by Schneider et al., we see research has found acetaminophen use during pregnancy is associated with lower intelligence quotient, IQ, when used without the presence of a fever, end quote. So, again, this could be related to the need for using this because of inflammation, and that's the bigger reason driving the dysfunction. Don't know. But in my mind, acetaminophen doesn't make sense. There are tons of studies on both sides of this debate. For me, I fall on the side of avoid it, keep it away, don't use it. Number four, alcohol. That's all you need to say. Every ounce of the data on alcohol in pregnancy is a bad idea. Don't touch it. Avoid it completely. Five, sunscreen, specifically the spray kind. Inhalation of these chemicals are not good for any of us. Stick to creams that are approved by the Environmental Working Group that have low toxicity. Link in the newsletter is available. It is always smart to limit the use of all sunscreens in general to only the skin that is exposed and based on your skin color and location at the time of use. Just super important. Six, avoid heavy metals. Mercury from large game fish. Arsenic from apples, rice, mushrooms. Lead from old houses and pipes. Copper from pipes and contaminated water. Tons of literature here. Cleveland Clinic has a site with a link in the newsletter that I think is worth exploring. Filter your house drinking water and drink only out of that clean water. That is worth your money to buy and spend on something of that nature. As always, prevention is the only true way to lessen risk, even when the data is not purely causative but associative. All of the articles that I link to in the newsletter for those avoidance pieces are available if you want to look at which articles that data was drawn from. All right, section two, literature review. Number one, chronobiology is a hot new field, as I have been highlighting lately. Here is a review looking at the timing of eating and metabolism. Eating based on the rise of the sun and its setting has biological significance based on emerging reports following the study of third shift workers. It is clear to me and most who follow the literature that eating late at night following the sun setting is a risk factor for poor metabolic activity. That leads to diabetes and metabolic syndrome. The genes involved in digestion are clearly circadian, and that fact cannot be changed. To eat when the sun is up and not otherwise makes good sense. I am avidly compressing my mealtime to this 12 to 6 p.m. time frame most days unless social experiences get in the way. Those are one-offs, though. This is especially important as we age, as our metabolic flexibility and efficiency wanes with every passing year. Two, circadian biology influences allergic disease. From a study by DiPrato et al. That came out in 2024 in the BMC Medicine Journal, we see the following. Quote, we found that light exposure at night was associated with higher odds of allergic diseases, with strong associations observed for ALAN exposure, followed by evening chronotype and exposure to night shift workers. When analysis were stratified by disease types, light at night exposure was significantly associated with asthma, allergic rhinitis, and skin allergies. We also found that the association between light at night exposure and allergic disease is more profound in youth than adults. Additionally, we observed significant geographical variations in the association between light at night exposure and allergic diseases, end quote. Again, not surprising, as night owls have their circadian biology upside down, including metabolism and immunity, driving a Th2 polarity type and a weakened T regulator cell activity, all of which are not immune dampening and pro-autoimmunity and pro-allergic disease. Three, from Jones et al. In the journal American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, we see, quote, increasing obesity was associated with a dose-dependent increase in cesarean sections. 27% for non-obese versus 6% for class 3 obesity. There was an association between increasing obesity and peripartum complications, including severe preeclampsia, 8% in non-obese versus double, 19% in class 3 obesity, and gestational diabetes, a tripling with 5% in non-obese versus 15% in class 3 obesity. infants born to parents, born to patients with class 3 obesity versus non-obese patients were more likely to develop grade 3, 4 intraventricular hemorrhage, sepsis, respiratory distress syndrome in the prematurity state and have initial cord blood gases showing a sign of stress at less than 7. Straightforward science here, folks. A critical understanding here is that the health equity for mom and the positive outcomes for baby are driven by obesity. And obesity is driven by lifestyle factors driving the choices that we are exposed to that would allow somebody to gain excess weight. This is poor quality food, not enough exercise, you know, and chemical exposure and many other things, stress that could be related to your socioeconomic status and or what's happened to you in your life traumatically. We as medical providers must do a better job screaming from the rooftops that the risk of weight gain during a woman's life, and especially once pregnant, is a big deal. There's absolutely no benefit to obesity in modern society for the person. Only a massive 2 to 3 downside risk for major problems like obesity-related preeclampsia and diabetes, which are both risk factors for autism in the offspring. Obesity is the smoking of our time. We have 100% had to dispense with nonsense of body weight and size normalization. We have to get rid of this stuff. It is and never will be healthy if your lifestyle inputs are toxic to your metabolism and that, therefore, of your offspring. Recipe of the week is a gluten-free naan bread, which is really, really good. Highly encourage it. My wife makes it, and I absolutely think it's fantastic. Give it a whirl. The song Bloom by Paper Kites is the song of the week. It's a good one. Give it a listen. And as always, hug those kids. And the disclaimer. As always, the information provided in this newsletter is for educational and informational purposes only and is not a substitute for advice and or treatment provided by your physician or other healthcare professional and is not to be used to diagnose or treat a health issue and does not constitute the formation of a provider-patient relationship. Have a great day.